Tango Tango Papa 1904, April 13, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles are with you, coming to you this evening from Battle Creek, Michigan. It's been about 10 days since the last podcast. And so I've been, they've been keeping me fairly busy. Not quite as busy as they have in the past, but nonetheless fairly busy. And the past few days, really kind of odd hours. the past several days I've had to, just because of the way things worked out, I had to get up like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then so I could drive to be somewhere, and starting the day that early, of course. Then it ends up making me end the day early, and then I have to go to bed and so I can sleep to begin the next day at 1 o'clock a.m. So that's kind of a consequence of the 14-hour clock. And then once they've done that, I don't really know, but I know other trucking companies have software that sort of is able to look at the driver statistics, the statistics for each driver, and then match up the loads that they have available to those driver statistics. And you could say, well, is that artificial intelligence? No, it's not really artificial intelligence. It's what it is they've, over time, the people that are programming, because they've got programmers for these systems. They've had these systems around, you know, the databases. They've typically, most large companies have had these databases around forever. And occasionally they'll migrate it from one system to another, but they've got these people that are hired as programmers, and so that's, they're just always constantly kind of refining things. And so in this case, they've really come up with increasingly clever, sophisticated instruction sets in order to try to tweak the system. So that, to make the system more useful, because the system's got the data. The human being would be able to kind of look at things and sort of put that together. But a lot of it, you can begin to apply rules to it. And people still have to look it over. But if they do it right, then the system can begin to make suggestions. It's basically just following instructions, and so it begins to make suggestions. And then if over time they've gotten their system so that it's got an increased instruction set, or it's a better instruction set. If this happens, then do that. And, you know, in the case of dispatching a truck, it's able to look at the hours that the driver drove the day before, and then it has to factor in there has to be a 10-hour break, and then the system can make suggestions on what's, you know. So it's actually fairly simple. It's a simple process for a human being to do it, but what makes it complicated and stressful for a human being is when, not only do they have one truck to do it, but let's say they've got 50 or 100 trucks that they're responsible for, then it becomes a problem because they don't have a human being just doesn't have enough time to go through all that and kind of look at that. Whereas a machine, once you've got kind of the basic instruction set, where it's sort of looking at these things, these different statistics, and kind of matching resources to jobs. In this case, the jobs would be loads that need to be hauled. Then the computer that makes one person a whole lot more productive, because in a lot of cases there's a certain percentage of the time the computer's just going to be right, because if they programmed it properly, it's going to be right. And then that kind of allows whoever the dispatchers are, it allows them to sort of oversee the portion that's right, and then kind of manually adjust the things that don't quite work right. So it's not, you can call a system like that kind of artificial intelligence. It's really not. It's really more of a spreadsheet function. And because a spreadsheet, is a spreadsheet artificial intelligence? No. It's a spreadsheet simply is looking at different things, and you can apply different logical equations to it if you set your spreadsheet up right. And so that's basically what it is. It's not really anything all that sophisticated. It's not intelligent. It's only intelligent to the extent that programmers come up with, they're able to sort of refine what they already have and tweak it and make it a little bit more clever. So that's what they've done. And so so the system, then it looks and it sees, well, basically it's going to give me the same kind of load because of the way the 10-hour breaks and all that work. It's going to end up giving me the same sort of load, especially if it's a shorter loads. I've had a bunch of shorter loads. It's going to end up giving the same types of loads because that's what it was before, and that's how the brake worked out. And so here's this short load, and it'll fall within the parameters of available hours. And so that's why I'll end up with, especially if I have a bunch of shorter loads, that's why I'll end up with a load after load after load that is pretty similar. So right now I unloaded. It took a long time to unload today at Lansing, Michigan. And so I finally got, it was there 10 hours essentially. Got there about 4:30 a.m. Eastern time this morning. Was there for 10 hours before I finally got away from there. And so in the meantime, then they've sent this load that picks up sometime in the morning. It should be drop and hook, picks up in the morning, and then that at Kalamazoo, and then that goes to I'd have to look, it goes to some town in Iowa, and it delivers the next morning there. So tomorrow, let's see, today was is today Monday? Let me look. I'm pretty sure today's Monday. Let's see, Monday, yes. So picks up tomorrow, and then it delivers early Wednesday morning, I believe. So that's what's kind of been happening right now. So my sleeping time has been kind of messed up because I've been partially sleeping in the daytime. And then today, because while I was waiting, I ended up sleeping quite a bit while the load was being unloaded, and I kind of went to sleep and then would wake up, and probably slept too much, but I don't know. At least so far, I haven't. A lot of times if I really mess my sleep pattern up, I will end up with a pre-migraine event, And so in this case, that hasn't happened, which is good because the pre-migraine, you know, it's not, I don't really get a migraine headache, but I do afterwards, after I have one of these pre-migraine events, I'll end up with a very mild, usually a mild throbbing headache that takes a couple of days to go away. And so that's kind of a pain in the rear to have one of those. And I can usually kind of get rid of it by taking some aspirin or, Tylenol or whatever, and that'll kind of get rid of it. It's just very, very mild headache. But nonetheless, it's much better if that doesn't happen. So, but really messing my sleep up will cause that, as well as the other triggers I that will do it that I know about are coffee. So I stay away from coffee. Chocolate will also do it. Chocolate can be a trigger as well. So usually I can eat a little bit of chocolate and not have a problem, but if I eat it like a Hershey bar or something, there's a good chance that that will trigger it. So I just stay away from those things, and I try not to mess my sleep up, but that's the one thing sometimes I really don't have control over. Depending on the load that I've been dispatched on, that can kind of really throw a monkey wrench into things. So, oh well, that's part of the job, and not a whole lot that I can do about that. And I don't get these pre-migraine events very often, and as I say, fortunately, I've never really get the migraine headache. I've had one, what I would consider one real migraine headache, and that's been actually many years ago, and that's when I realized that what was triggering it was that I was, you know, I had this job where I had really messed up hours for one thing, which was probably kind of helping it along. And to top that off, they had free coffee. And so I normally don't drink coffee. I've just, you know, but since it was there, I was drinking it and it was free and I was drinking a lot of it. And so that, that's when I realized the coffee was a trigger. So, and it's not the caffeine, because there's a lot of things that have caffeine in it, and I end up drinking quite a bit of caffeine in the form of diet sodas, and primarily diet sodas, but tea, hot tea, iced tea. It's got a lot of caffeine in it, and that's not a problem. It's not the caffeine. There's something else about probably that the coffee beans share with the cocoa beans. Don't know exactly what that is, what ingredient that might be, but it's interesting because if you look up pre-migraine event, different people, there are a bunch of different triggers that people have yeah, it can end up varying from one person to the next. So I've got an audio file that's sent by Jeremy, and I listened to the very first part of it just to make sure that it was going to play okay. But pretty much I haven't listened to it, so I'll probably end up doing a stop-start on it. It goes on, I don't know, probably for about 4.5 minutes altogether. So without further ado, here is Jeremy.
Hey, Tom. It's Jeremy. It's been a while since we talked, but I'm going to check in and find out how you're doing. And just had a quick question for you. I was wondering, so I know you feel pretty adamantly about the poor quality of public education.
Well, let me interrupt already. The problem with our education system, you know, you can say, well, it had whatever its core, quote unquote, core values are. The problem with it is not the idea of public education. That's not really the problem. The problem is that, you know, it goes back to our morals as a nation. The group morals overall have gone right into the toilet. And anybody that is honest and it kind of looks around is able to see that. And so once that happens, the wrong people end up getting in charge. The wrong people are in charge of the government. The wrong people are in charge of the public school system. It goes right on down the line. And so therefore, you get the wrong people in charge, they begin to push their own agenda. And inevitably, in any system, it always happens. The wrong people are in charge. What does that mean, the wrong people? The people that want to sort of rewrite the morals. The people that want to turn wrong into right. The people that, those people, are they see the next generation as sort of ripe for the picking. They're going to reprogram them, make them think that wrong is right and right is wrong. It's okay to kill your baby. It's okay to have all the sex that you want. It's okay to, you know, to do, you know, pick any topic that or any thing that destroys the that really destroys the so-called nuclear family. Pick any of those things, those forces, you know, or you know, you go to the Bible and the Ten Commandments, you know, rape, rob, pillage, murder, covet, greed, envy, all of those things. Teach them that it's really okay to do that. It's just shades of gray, and we're, after all, we're just animals. We're just monkeys that are sort of clinging to a rock, and there really is no there's no God, and so therefore there's no morals. It's all relative, and we're just monkeys clinging to this rock on a voyage to nowhere. That just kind of, we just sort of happened somehow. This existence just happened, and we're all here, and we can be, you know, we're just there to be reprogrammed, and we're going to program utopia. And so you send your kids to a school system that's run by those kind of people, and ours is. Public school system is ran by those people. Then you end up, you're sending them into, it's like sending lambs to slaughter. Screws their minds. And so that's what I have against the public education system. It's really what I have, the case that I make against the public school system is the case that I make about all of our morals. Overall, our morals are in the toilet. They're gone. And to kind of review, if your morals are corrupted, if you've got some, you know, whatever it is, you've got something that you want, some perverted behavior that you want to protect. Let's say you're, you know, just pick something out of the air. Let's say that you're a nudist, and you think it's really okay, it's really cool for people to go around nude and what have you. And you think that, you know, clothes, why do we wear these clothes? Why are we so stuck up and we wear these clothes? We should all just be able to be free and, quote-unquote, free and just go around without any clothing. And so, therefore, we're going to, you know, get in charge of the school system, and we're going to teach kids that it's really okay to, you know, why do you want to wear your parents? Something's wrong with your parents. They want to force you to wear clothes. It'd be so much better if you could just go around naked like a monkey can, because after all, we're just animals anyway, so why can't we go around naked? They can do it. How come we can't? Your dog can run around naked. Why can't human beings? It's all, you know, so they have to take the value system away. They have to destroy that, create doubt, cause the kids to, you know, because kids naturally resent their parents because their parents are not perfect. Their parents have failed them. So really amp that resentment up towards the parents. And once you've done that, once you've, you know, once you're, let's say you're a nudist, you know, and you really want to think that, you know, there's nothing, there's really nothing wrong with running around without any clothes on. And, you know, you think everybody should feel that way. And so that one thing is enough to cause you to end up seeing the world backwards. That's all it takes, is one thing. Or let's say you've had you're a woman and you've had an abortion, and you don't want to admit that was a wrong thing to do, and so you find your slimy friends that bolster you and tell you, you know, and you all agree that wrong is right and right's wrong. We're going to have a kill our baby pride march, you know, because there's safety in numbers. We're going to have an abortion pride march. And we can all feel good about it, and we'll bully the people that somehow they're making us feel bad. We'll bully the people that think that abortion is wrong into we'll force them to think the way we do, and like it, and then somehow that's going to take the guilt away. Of course, it doesn't. But once you've got whatever little thing that you want to protect, that you want to keep your conscience at bay, you want to keep that, you know, drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience, so you can really think that it's really okay to have an abortion. It's really okay to murder your baby. We'll call it a fetus, and it's you know, it's just a little tadpole, and it's not a human being, and it because you can't see it, it's not human, and therefore it's really okay to have the doctor chop it up and vacuum it out. And you have to drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. And so you end up with the wrong spirit in charge, and so you may try to, in your own mind, you think, well, I can be right, you know, have this one little thing that I'm right about, but and then the rest of it is all, you know, I can live with whatever else, you know. It's not okay to steal, and it's not okay to rape, but it is okay to murder your baby. You know, in this circumstance, it's okay to murder your baby. So therefore, you think that you can still have morals, but lose them in this one instance. And of course you can't, because that one instance, that wedge ends up, over time, it ends up causing you to become separated, and therefore you end up 180 degrees out of phase with reality. You become separated with your creator, or from your creator. You become separated from that potential identity, and you end up seeing the world backwards. The wrong person, the wrong people seem, you know, attract you. They seem attractive. The right people somehow they cause that conscience to ache, and somehow they're hurting you. You think somehow they're hurting you, and so. We've got a society full of people like that. And furthermore, once you've done that, once you've, you know, and there's this mysterious thing, you have this willingness, you either have a willingness to face reality, and you want to know the truth, or you don't, and you want to know yourself as the truth, basically, that, you know, and, you know, it's really okay to kill your baby. You want to know yourself as the truth, and so then that causes you to, you know, we've got a whole society of people that are thinking that way, that think that we can just reprogram, and so then the wrong people get in charge. But that causes you to be suggestible. It causes you to be very suggestible. The more wrong you are, the more suggestible you are. Once you're separated, the bigger that wedge is. Once you're separated from And all it takes is one little resentment. You think, oh, that's just a little innocent little resentment. Once you've, once you're separated from your who you could be, from that potential identity, then you you have to rely on the group. You have to rely on the group. The group think, group love. The group loves me just as I am. And you have to rely on the group to for their approval. You have to have the group approval in order to continue that wedge and sort of continue the false reality that you're trying to live in, the fake reality where it's really okay to murder your baby, or it's really okay to run around with in public with no clothes. To go back to the other example, or pick your own example, it's really okay to rob socialism. It's really okay to rape and rob and pillage and murder and whatever else. You know, I've got my friends that agree with me. The group agrees with me. So the danger of that, and then beyond that, there's a tremendous danger, because once you get past a certain point, a certain percentage of people, because, you know, people, there's always going to be a certain percentage of people that are that way. But once you go beyond a certain point, then the wrong people are end up in charge of the public school system, then they're deliberately going to try to create as many new people that see the world backwards just like they do. They're trying to create as many as possible, and who do they use? They use your kids as a means to do that. And where do you think war comes from? How does war happen? The reason war happens is because you've got these groups of people that are controlled by, you know, someone's a puppet master, and you've got this group of people that they think they have their own thoughts, they believe they're patriotic and God knows what else, but they think they have their own thoughts and they're acting out of their own will, and they're not. They're the puppet master's controlling them. And so the puppet master is able to assume that control and make those people do whatever he wants, make them do his bidding, and they'll defend it to the death as their own thoughts, as their own will. It's a very dangerous thing, and that's why that happens in every, you look at every, the history of every country that's ever existed, and it's been the same thing. Same thing inevitably always happens. So the public education system that we have today is a wicked place. It's because wicked people are in charge. You know, there is really, it's kind of like government. There really is. It's just imaginary, or, you know, our money has value because we imagine that it does. There's really no money. It's just we all kind of agree that it has value. So there really is no government there or there really is no church. It's just a group of people. So there really is no, none of these things actually exist. It's just behavior. It's what people responding to whatever the greatest pressure is. And they think this is what the group thinks, and so therefore I have to go along with the group. So the group's going to go to war, then I have to go along with that. Group thinks it's okay to murder your baby, then, well, by golly, then it must be okay. Etc., etc. So you feed your there, you know, and again, there is no the so-called public education system is simply, it's groupthink, and our groupthink is corrupted beyond belief, and that's what's wrong. our groupthink, especially in the United States of America, our groupthink is corrupted beyond belief, unbelievably wicked. So that's what's wrong. That's why if I ever had kids, and thank God I don't, if I did, I would, knowing what I know, I would not feed them to the public school system. It's just that simple. The public school system is a wicked place because of the wicked people that are in charge. And the wicked school system, the wicked people in charge of the school system, take over where the wicked parents fail.
And I'm just curious about, as far as like what you equate, sort of how you consider, like how you would value education in general. So what is your thought about the value of education at all? So would you carry over your thoughts about public education over into college or university? How does that equate to, say, private school?
Okay, so education in general is important, obviously. But where we end up going wrong is, especially with the public school system, and I've talked about this extensively in the past, when I was a kid in school, it was bad enough. Maybe I was over, you could say, well, maybe I was overly sensitive to it, but I don't know. But in any case, when I was a kid in school, I was able to, you know, it was kind of a traumatic experience, and I was kind of able to just, you know, just kind of do what I had to get to sort of skid by, and I never really applied myself. As far as what the school was trying to get me to do. Now, one of the problems that I had, kindergarten through 12th grade, I ended up changing schools 36 different times. Kindergarten through 12th grade, 36 different school changes. Now, that probably has something to do. You could say, well, that has something, that's why he hates public school or whatever, or he dislikes it. You can say that, you know, but I, you know, overall, the problem that I saw with public school, you know, and this is me speaking as an adult, it's almost like they put you on a conveyor belt. You know, they put each child on the conveyor belt, and they drive a funnel, and you know, drill a hole in the top of your head and drive a funnel in it, and then the kids are going by on the, you know, each conveyor belt for each grade. You have a conveyor belt for each school grade, and they have this funnel driven in the top of your head, and they're just it's as if they're pouring whatever they think that, you know, knowledge goes in your head for each grade. Doesn't matter what you're interested in, what you're curious about, what the kid is curious about, we're going to force them to you know, learn about this and learn about that, learn about things that are just absolutely irrelevant to them. Force them to, learn, you know, these things, and they teach in just the absolute most boring way they possibly can, and for the most part. Now, you know, there are some exceptions to that, but overall, and this was back in, you know, when I was a kid, the 60s and the 70s in school, and it was bad then. I can only imagine what it is now. So, the thing that saved me, they had the school systems that I was in, and they were small schools in Kansas, but these schools in Kansas all had fabulous public or school libraries, and so I would spend hours and hours and hours, kind of looking through books, checking books out of the public library or out of the school library rather. That I was interested in, I was curious about, I was able to satisfy my own curiosity at the same time that I was in this situation where these, you know, they were boring classes being taught in the most boring way, and things that were just absolute facts that were irrelevant, taught in a boring way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was able to kind of pick and choose what I wanted to learn, and that's really where the school system goes wrong. They really should be encouraging kids to, you know, you put them in an environment, you put the kid in an environment. Kids are naturally curious. How, and if they're not, if you know, if you want to argue and say, well, kids aren't naturally curious, how the hell do they learn how to talk? You don't have to go to school to learn how to talk. How does that happen? How is it that you can learn how to speak? You know, that millions and millions and millions of billions of people have learned how to speak as little kids. Now, how does that happen? It's because they're able to, they're curious about the, children are naturally curious about the world. And so the school system tries to destroy that curiosity. It's kind of like, have you ever, go out and you see a blossom, or you know, like a rose blossom that hasn't blossomed yet, and you try to force it to come open, force it to blossom, and you can't. You just pull the things off. But if you just let the thing go and it's naturally on its own, responding to the environment on its own naturally, then it opens up and you have this flower. But you can't force it to open up. You just destroy it. You end up mutilating it. And so that's the problem. That's the biggest problem with the public school system, apart from nowadays they're teaching them things that are just absolutely stupid, and at the university level as well. At this point, I think that for the most part, you know, you're better off probably avoiding going to school, or, you know, and maybe, you know, in a university education, if you're curious and you really want to do it and you're really self-motivated, then go for it. Have at it. But as far as just doing it because you have to do it or that's what's expected of you, it's not necessarily going to help you. And the fact that they're teaching, you know, you've got millions and millions and millions of people that have taken student loans from the government, and of course that's all the U.S. government has kind of took all that over because of, you know, in the past few years, because of the Obama administration, they've taken control of the entire student loan system, and so you've got all these millions of people that owe, you know, they borrowed all this money, you know, in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans to, you know, go to university, and then they get these degrees, and the degrees are pretty much worthless. They've been miseducated. They've been maleducated. And the evidence is they can't get a job. There's no job for doing whatever it is they do. They're useless. They're useless human beings, you know, because it's easy. You want to get a job. What you have to do is make yourself useful somehow. You know, you think of it, how can I make myself useful to my fellow human beings? How can I make myself useful to my fellow human beings? And what is it that I enjoy doing? You know, and if whatever it is, go, you know, do that and figure out a way of doing it usefully. And you got yourself a job, or you've got yourself a career, so-called career track. But if you've ended up just going to, you know, one of these, you know, you've got this university degree and it's kind of meaningless, and you can't get a job, you're sort of a useless human being, and we've ended up with, there's millions of them now. And, you know, and they complain, well, I can't get a job, there's no jobs. Well, there are plenty of jobs, and you know, even during the absolute worst, and I've said this over and over again, I realize everybody can't drive a truck, but between, you know, the absolute worst of the economy, there's still a shortage of over-the-road truck drivers. There's a lot of people, it's beneath them, they won't do it, for whatever reason, they won't do it, they're not going to do that, too much of a hardship, et cetera, et cetera. easier to sit at home in the basement and be a basement troll with mommy and daddy feeding you till you're 35 or 40 years old. There are jobs, but, you know, and another proof that there are jobs, you know, how are all the Mexicans able to get jobs? You know, how is it that they're able to come and be useful, make themselves useful? You know, and then, but you've got all these millions of people that have been miseducated. So there's, education is very important, but in order for the education to mean something, you as a student have to be motivated. You have to be motivated to learn. And if you have that motive, if you're blessed with that motivation to learn, then in today's world, I mean, you've got the world is right at your fingertips at this point. You can learn anything you want. It's incredible what we have available today as far as being able to, you know, as far as being able to learn. So, but as a, you know, as an adult going to university, you know, you hopefully you've matured. You know, but unfortunately, there's a lot of people in our society that have not matured. You've got people in their 60s and 70s that really have not matured, and they're still, you know, you can kind of tell by the way they exist. You can sort of tell that they've never matured, and somehow they've been able to. Exist their entire life without maturing. And, you know, so we've got, that's the danger, you know, really of the education system, is that it can end up, sort of perpetrating the kind of the fantasy world that, a lot of people have been, ended up being raised in. A sort of an unreal existence, and of course, once you know, now that the government is in charge of all of the student loans, and you've got all of these, you know, they've got this perfect storm of being able to support a corrupt university system, where you've got lots and lots of corrupt teachers, you know, professors. And they can't get, because of the tenure, they can't get rid of them. You've got these really corrupt public universities in particular, and they're funneling all these, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions and billions of dollars into this university system through the student loan program. And so, you know, that's one way of just kind of funneling them, making sure that the gravy train goes on. Why is it that... that the cost of these education, the cost of college degrees just keeps going up and up and up and up. How is that? Why is that happening? It's not happening in other sectors. Why is it happening there? And you know, once you've taken the student loans, and some people have $50,000 to $100,000 worth of student loans once they graduate, and maybe they can get a job, and you know, a good chance that they can't. Or at least what they, you know, because they were miseducated, they have to get a job doing, you know, driving a truck or being a hairdresser or something, if they're willing to work at all, then, you know, they owe all this money. And of course, you can't bankrupt, you can't discharge your student loans through bankruptcy. You can't get rid of it. Once you've taken on that debt, you've got it. You'll never, the only way to beat it is to die. So then... you've got the government with a sort of a sword of Damocles hanging over these people's necks. You know, then they've that's the perfect way to manipulate. And that's really, you know, you want to know what groupthink is. You can manipulate people with it. It's easy. I can, you know, if I have your need for my approval, then I can manipulate you with that. And I can make you go to war. I can make you kill people. I can make you do all kinds of things. It's easy. The flaw is you have to, the group, you know, you need the group's approval. You need my approval. You need the group's approval. And if I'm the puppet master, I'm able to manipulate that. You know, so it's education is a good thing, but it's education is only good to the extent that you're able to, you've got your own motivation, you got your own curiosity, you learn out of your own curiosity. That is the best kind of education to have, is to be able to learn out of your own curiosity and not have to be force-fed by some bureaucrat that's kind of pouring stuff into the funnel that's drilled into the top of your head on a conveyor belt.
I was raised in a fairly conservative home. I went to private school, and I was homeschooled. And so I experienced kind of both of those worlds, but I've never personally gone to a public school. I do pay a lot of money for my kids to go to private school, but I also pay pretty close attention to their academics, and I would do that. I'm confident that I would do that no matter whether I was paying for it, paying for them to go to a private school or not.
So if you're paying for it, there's a lot less chance that something is going to go wrong, and you've got, because you're paying for it out of your pocket, you've got kind of control. Now, that's not to say that, you know, there could end up being a bad teacher in there, or the curriculum might not be quite right, but once you're paying for it, that sort of changes the equation versus having, well, the state's paying for it, or if some third party is paying for it, then the problem with the state, the state kind of paying for it, the idea that the state's paying for it, is that it sort of removes your control, and then therefore it's you don't have any control, and it's much easier to then they can kind of do whatever they want, versus if you're paying for the service, then you've kind of got really good control over what they're doing. Now, let's say, for example, I wanted to learn how to do something. You know, it could be anything. But let's say I want to learn how to do something, and then I find some teacher that has some kind of a program that I feel confident that as long as I apply myself, they can teach me. Well, then if I pay for that service, and I apply myself, I stand a much better chance of getting what I'm paying for, versus, well, it's just for free, it's a freebie. Somehow it's, the state's paying for it. This nebulous state somehow is paying for it. So you've got a lot greater potential of having control over what's going on. And, of course, that doesn't mean, just because you're paying for a private school doesn't mean that you just can absolve yourself as a parent and kind of let that go. You have to... You have to stay involved. That's the most important thing. And this is coming, I'm not a parent, never have been a parent, never will be a parent. But so I'm just kind of disarming myself right there. But as I see it, it's the parent's job to kind of be there. You brought the child into the world. Be there, sort of be the, you know, be an environment for the child that kind of protects the child from the world to a certain extent. You know, you don't let them run out in the street because they don't know any better, that type of thing. But you're there to watch them and be with them and pay attention to them, because that's what they really want. That's what they really want. They want you to be there. And see, in the same way, when I was talking before, the same way that, you know, you do something wrong and then you try to drive a wedge between yourself and your conscience. What the public school system, in large part, there are people that, have taken control of that. If they look at the kids can tend to look at the parents as if they're gods, and that's just a fact that, you know, kids tend to look at parents as if they're gods. So the job then of the public schools, you know, the people in the public school that want to corrupt the kids away and reprogram them, drive a wedge between the kid and his parents, you know, get them to do something wrong and then drive a wedge between them, and then the parent becomes this painful conscience that the kid then the kid will want to drive, you know, make that wedge bigger, become more, you know, get away from that parent, get away from that pain, because of the in this case the parent represents conscience, and they run into the arms of the public school teacher, you know. And of course, you know, the kids that there are kids that are able to kind of thrive in that environment, and they end up, the ones that are really good at it end up being the next generation of school teachers, because they're really good at kind of going along to get along, and they can kind of be part of the bureaucracy, and they've kind of figure out how to thrive and exist in that kind of system, you know, and sort of go along to get along type of system. And then they're able to they don't have any problem compromising themselves and compromising the integrity of other people in order to, you know, they take advantage of that. And then they've got a job, and you know, and they can twist it around in their own mind that, you know, they're really noble because of the, you know, what they're doing. And then I hear these people, well, I'm a school teacher, and so on and so forth, and, you know, and then people, you know, suck on their egos because of what they do. And then you have this idea that school teachers should be paid more because they're so important, and blah 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 blah. And so I could go on and on and on. So anyway, let's listen to the rest of Jeremy's comment.
But I just felt, you know, when we were looking around, I always feel that competition breeds quality. So I feel like the public school is not an environment conducive to that. And many times in that environment, they actually discourage children from being competitive, and I didn't want my kids to be that way. Not to say that all schools are that way, all public schools, but, you know, I know plenty of people who went to public school because their parents couldn't afford to go to private school. And I'll say that there's been a couple times when I've been ready to tap out and send the kids to public school just because it was a huge financial burden. And still is, but I think that, you know, it's just something that we have decided as a family. My wife works and I work, and we both work so that the kids can have a private education. So I'm convinced of the benefits of it, but again, I have nothing to compare it to since I never experienced public education. So I know lots of people who are amazing scholars who went to public school, and I think I attribute that more so to their parenting than anything else. So I think that, you know, it seems to me that where parents are willing to be involved and be active in a child's life, in their educational life, there seem to be positive results. And sometimes, yes, that's in spite of, you know, the teachers in the system. And any system that rewards teachers just for time served, I have a problem with. So I don't want to really get started on teachers unions and all that, because that's a huge sore spot for me. But, you know, and also that I pay property tax for my kids to go to public school but don't actually use the public schools is another sore spot for me. But then, you know, people pay property tax that don't have children at all, so I can't really complain too much there. So anyway, I was just wanting to chime in on that and get a little bit more clarification from you, because I know that it's kind of a hot topic for you, and you've made it clear that you despise public education. But just, you know, wondering if you would give the topic a little bit of thought and maybe chime in with your thoughts about that. Thanks, Tom. Hope you're driving safely or enjoying some downtime wherever you are. I'm still a little bit behind on the podcast, so I need to catch up and find out exactly where you're at. But just wanted to say hi from Virginia, and if you're ever in the area, Fredericksburg, Virginia, I-95, hit me up. Take care, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeremy. The thing is, it's not so much the system. You know, people keep talking about the system and somehow we're going to perfect the system, a political system, this system, that system. It's not like you're going to perfect a sewer system, or you're going to perfect an electrical system, or you're going to perfect a software system, what I was talking about earlier. By the way, not to change the subject, but artificial intelligence, who cares about the driverless car? What I want is a machine that can really do an excellent job of cleaning toilets. I would pay good money for a toilet cleaning and a really effective toilet cleaning robot. And, you know, you pour in all the artificial intelligence you can. I want a really effective toilet cleaning robot that would be able to just keep those toilets spotless. You know, I've got three toilets in my house. I want those things spotless. So that's what I want. I would pay good money for that. Is anybody working on that? But anyway, getting back to the other topic, at hand, it's not the system that's the problem. The system becomes the problem when you have morally corrupt people kind of influencing it and running it. So therefore, as a parent, you know, it's your job, as I was saying before, it's your job to kind of, you know, keep your kids from running out in the street because they don't know any better. It's your job to sort of protect them from corrupted people. And of course, we're all corrupted to a certain extent. But even so, as a parent, it's your job to kind of to protect them from corruption and enable them to protect themselves. Your job as a parent should be to teach the kids that, you know, we're in a corrupt world. This world is kind of a halfway house between heaven and hell. This earth, this existence is a halfway house between heaven and hell. And so therefore, it's your job as a parent to teach your child. Not only do you protect them to a certain extent, but until you teach them to be able to protect themselves and then go out on their own and not, you know, and be able to kind of live their life on their own and, have their own existence and not be corrupted by the world around them. You know, so that's the goal as I see it. And so it's not just the public school system that's a danger, but there's dangers all around. And if you you raise your kids in such a way that they're able to kind of make they're able to live sort of make their way in the world, be in the world but not end up becoming of it, then you've done your job. But the problem is that especially with the public school system, the kids end up becoming of the world because of you know, and again, it depends on, you know, how involved are the parents and what have you. And you, and any other, you, another thing you were talking about, the burden, it's a huge financial burden to pay for private school. Absolutely, that's a huge financial burden. But on the other hand, how many people do you know that where both parents work? I mean, you know, it's very common. Both parents are working and they say, oh, well, we can't afford to send our kids to private school. Yet somehow they've got all kinds of computers and Xboxes and smartphones and God knows what else. You know, and each kid probably has their own TV and they've got their cable, the cable thing to their room and God knows, you know, and all of this stuff. Somehow they're able to afford that. Now, how's that? That seems to be a case of kind of mismatched, besmirched priorities. You know, because is it more important? Put it this way, is it more important for your kid to have an Xbox? Is it more important for your kid to have his own computer? Is it more important for your kid to have his own smartphone than it is to have a parent that's involved or to have a parent that cares? To have a parent that's there to protect and encourage and teach? Are those Xboxes and those smartphones and televisions and whatever else, are that, is that more important? The way I look at it, of course not. Those things are trivial. You don't love your kid by buying them an Xbox or a smartphone or having their own television. That's not loving your kid. So, I could go on and on and on. So, probably should go ahead and end this. Been going on now. I think this is over an hour at this point. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.